This is 1330 WRCA Watertown, Boston, a Beasley Broadcast Group station.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Tube Talk.
My day, bend an ear and listen to my version
of a really solid Tennessee excursion.
Pardon me, boy, is that the Chattanooga juju?
Yes, yes, track 29.
Boy, you can give me a shine.
Can you afford to board Chattanooga choo-choo?
I got my fare
and just a trifle to spare.
You leave the Pennsylvania station about a quarter to four, read a magazine, and then you're in Baltimore.
Dinner in the diner, nothing could be finer
than to have your ham and eggs in Carolina.
When you hear the whistle blowing eight to the bar, then you know that Tennessee is not very far.
Shamalala calling, gotta keep it rolling.
Ooh, ooh, Chattanooga, there you are.
There's gonna be a certain party at the station.
Satin and lace.
I used to call funny face. She's gonna cry until I tell her that I'll never roam.
So, Chattanooga choo-choo,
won't you choo-choo me home?
Chattanooga, Chattanooga,
get aboard.
Chattanooga, Chattanooga,
all aboard.
Chattanooga, Chattanooga,
Chattanooga choo-choo,
won't you choo-choo me home?
Chattanooga choo-choo.
Chattanooga Choo Choo, Glenn Miller with Tex Beneke singing.
A heart that's true.
To whisper, darling, you're my guiding star. Not caring what you own, but just what you are.
A peaceful sky.
Try.
because there are such
Frank Sinatra with the Tommy Dorsey Band. Well, if you'd like to learn how an entrepreneurial hardware store owner took old radios and a talented repairman and helped boost his own business and build a lot of goodwill along the way, it's a story you'll only hear on Tube Talk, so I'd encourage you to stay tuned. That was the Piano Concerto in B-flat, Freddie Martin and his orchestra. And Freddie Martin was the house band at the Coconut Grove in Los Angeles. That was from 1941, and he seemed to do a lot of classical takes. He did a version of Rhapsody in Blue, which we've had here on the show as well, which I'm quite fond of. Thanks again for listening to Tube Talk. This is WRCA 1330 AM, This is the show geared toward antique radio collectors, music lovers, and those who still enjoy listening to the radio. From Admiral to Zenith, we'll talk about it all here on Tube Talk. Now on to our guest for the evening. We're joined by Jerry Cates, formerly of Martin Aborn Hardware, right here in Brookline, Mass. Jerry had written an article in the Antique Radio Classified a little while ago, and it had caught my eye, and it was a very interesting story. He was in the hardware business and also had a relationship with a repairman, an older fellow, I believe, who was a real radio guy inside and out, who was doing repair and restoration work for Jerry. He was offering these sets in his hardware store, and it's a great story. He was building some business. He was building some goodwill. He opened up the world of radio collecting to a lot of new people, people who might not normally get into radio collecting. So I'd just like to say thank you for being with us tonight, Jerry. And maybe you can tell us a little bit about when you started out in the hardware business and how you got started with the radios.
Paul, first of all, I have to tell you how pumped I am to be here. This is just really such a blast and an honor. In 1995, the company I worked for, hardware company, decided that they were going to make a lot more money by getting rid of all their managers. I was out of a job along with a bunch of other people. Found a hardware store in Brookline that was really way past its prime. There were seven other hardware stores within a mile and a half of Aborn True Value. What was I going to do to turn things around? Well, the first thing I did was to take a look and say, okay, let's do something unique. Well, I love antique radios. I've always enjoyed collecting them, rebuilding them, had a great time with them. I brought in a few radios, put them into my window, and lo and behold, customers started coming in and looking at the radios and going like, what in the world are those? I would explain to them that when I was a kid, my grandmother had a Westinghouse refrigerator type radio with the W that would light up when it was ready to play, and I was fascinated. That's what got me started. Well, as I started bringing more radios in, people would come in, and one of the best parts about it is that the bulk of the people who were purchasing the radios were young people. People who said, well, don't they have FM? And I'd say, nope. But let's plug this thing in, and they would wait a couple minutes, and the sound would come on, and they go like, "Wow, that's awesome!"
Well, I think it's kind of it's a treat for anyone the first time you know you see something that looks so different from what you're used to in consumer electronics, as a nice dial light. Maybe if it's a wooden cabinet or a unique plastic cabinet, it's something nice to look at. It's not just based on function. And then, you know, you'll sit, you'll turn it on, you let it come up a little bit, and kind of smell the dust and the heat coming up off the tubes. It's a very totally different, very non-digital, non-modern electronic experience. And now you had quite a few customers who were repeat customers as well. I remember one fellow you told about in the article was, I think it was a dentist. And he had been in several times, and he started to build a collection based on, you know, what he had seen in your store. He was a repeater, and it was to the point where I guess he had to smuggle them in the back door a little bit. It was getting, you know, he's starting to build up a little bit more than I think his wife was happy with. But it just kind of goes to the attraction of these sets and how they can lure somebody in. And there is an active hobby. There's a lot of people who have the bug. And it's just very neat to see it in a regular retail setting. Now, did this also help your business because you picked up in foot traffic and people were interested? And were they also good hardware customers, too, or were they more radio customers?
The answer is that anything that brings somebody into your place of business is a win. And it's called getting footsteps in the door, and it got a lot of footsteps in the door. People who perhaps were not interested in the radio would come in and purchase other things. It did a huge amount to help our business. Within a year, we were profitable. Within a couple of years, we were making a pretty good amount of money.
Now, how did you get hooked up with the fellow who was doing the repair and the restoration work? He was a gentleman, I believe, out sort of the western, heading towards Worcester area. And he was somebody who had been in radio for many years, and you hooked up with him to do the you would find the sets, and then he would physically go ahead and do the repair work for you.
Well, to begin with, I would go to a number of the New York shows. They used to have them four times a year. They were a blast. It was a great way to get into the hobby, to find a number of terrific sets. And I would find a bunch of sets that I would buy, and, of course, I'd get them home and they wouldn't work. I would do a little bit of the work myself, basically change out the filter capacitors, which would get a number of them to work. But then I said, I need to go a little bit deeper than this. I need somebody to help me out. At all of these shows, I would run into a guy named Tom Romano. Tom was probably about 10 years older than myself, had been a engineer for the phone company, and this was his hobby, this was his love. And through Tom, I just became totally enamored with buying more and more radios and realized that Tom would take these things. He'd say, why did you buy that piece of
blank? Yeah, I know. Give me the dirty look. I'm very familiar with
that. He would say, okay, give it to me. And a few weeks later, I would get a call back because I would normally bring him six or seven radios. And he and his wife, Mary, would generally meet me in Framingham, which was about halfway between Milford and Boston. And we would make the radio exchange in a parking lot. Yes, there were a couple of times when people would come over and try to figure out what kind of deal we were doing.
And that's right.
Got a little embarrassing, but Tom was just wonderful. And most importantly, Tom would take these sets. No, they weren't fully restored, but you could plug them in and they would work. And they would generally, they would play. This allowed me to bring radios back to Aborn, put them on the shelf, put them at a very, very reasonable price. What do I mean by that? The prices for most of them would not be more than $100. That was really the kind of key, and it allowed a whole lot of people to get something that would work and take home and not spend a whole lot of money.
Well, it's interesting, too, in just in general, you know, you're reviving an independent hardware store. And like so many other things, the golden age of radio, yes, there were chain stores, but there were more independent businessmen, independent radio servicers, independent radio sales. You know, we talk about Main Street America when people did business with people that they knew, people who lived in the community. And there's a certain place for that. And it's almost as if, you know, we've talked on the show at various points in time. If you go into a big box electronics store and you go in and you chat with one of the salespeople, he could tell you all about what something does. Why it works, he has no idea, other than it plugs into the wall. And it's, in many ways, sort of a depersonalized situation. So not only is it nice to see radio continuing on in an independent store, but it's nice to see somebody in an independent business who pays attention to their customers be successful at it as well. And it reinforces what I've always felt, and I live in a town where we have an independent hardware store. He's an institution. He's been there for years and years and years. If you know what you're talking about, you have good business principles, you take care of your customers, you know where everything is in that store, and you can find all these hard-to-find things. People come in and say, do you have this? And you can find it for them. There's a place for you. And, you know, radio harkens back to those times, and I was glad to see that it could work in a hardware store of all places. And in Brookline, and it's funny because you were talking about how word kind of got out in the community that there are these radios at the hardware store. I work with a fellow who lives in the same town where the hardware store was. He knew I was a collector. He would always tell me, I should go down. You should see, oh, I saw something different in the window. You should go down and take a look. You know, he keeps telling me. You know, one thing or another, I don't have enough time. I don't get over to Brookline, and unfortunately, I missed my opportunity to go over and see some of Jerry's stuff. Now, you had mentioned you had always been interested in radio since that experience with the Westinghouse. How young were you, and what were you more of a listener, or were you interested more in a technical point of view when you were younger, Jerry?
Well, the best part about growing up in Wellesley, which is a little bit west of here, was right across the street they opened up a Heathkit store. I was about 13, 14 at the time, and guess who lived there pretty much on a daily basis? And back then, we were one of the last people in the neighborhood to only have a black and white TV. And I begged and begged my dad, we have to have a color set. The people across the street have one. We all over the place. And I finally said to my dad, and this was a kicker, I said, I'll tell you what. I will build the TV set. I was in the ninth grade at the time, and he said, if you think you can do it, okay, we will go to Heathkit and we will buy the color TV. We bought the set, and I then proceeded to spend the entire next week in the basement putting it together, solder joint by solder joint, piece by piece, and days later, I plugged the thing in, and guess what?
It worked.
It didn't work.
It didn't work. Oh,
it didn't work at all.
I had a 50-50 chance, and I guess I blew it on that one. So,
So our next-door neighbor, who was also into this, he came by, and we spent 3 days troubleshooting her. And he said, nope, you did this right, you did that right. Well, finally, I had to kick the bucket and bring it back up to Heathkit, totally dejected, saying, oh, boy. 3 days later, I got a call from Heathkit. You can come and pick up your TV. I was so, A, relieved, but B, bummed out. And I said, okay, how much is it going to be and what was wrong with it? And they said, well, it actually turns out that the IF board that was preassembled was defective. We replaced the board for you. The TV is ready for you to pick up. It works beautifully.
Well, see, is a vindication from Heathkit. And, you know, it's funny because Heathkit, not only did they make TV kits, they made all types of electronic kits, radio kits. And you will see people who still sell kit radios to collectors. And, again, it goes back to it was a very popular hobby, I know, in the 50s for somebody to do their own little electronic projects. If you collect any of the old magazines, the popular electronics magazines, I've got stacks of these that some people have given me. In addition to seeing a lot of neat projects, you get to see step-by-step instructions. You get to see all the ads from all the different companies, and there were hundreds of them that would offer you all types of do-it-yourself kits and whatnot. And it's funny that you mentioned the Heathkit, because I used to get the Heathkit catalog when I was a kid. And I have a terrible confession. I never built a thing, but I would look for hours through the – it was this thick – it was like the Sears catalog, and it had absolutely every electronic gadget and gizmo that you would ever want to do. I was fascinated with the thing, but, you know, I lived in an apartment. I didn't have a basement. Wasn't very good with soldering. Didn't even know what a soldering iron was. I was just fascinated at seeing all the stuff that you could do yourself. Because I think that's another thing that we've lost a little bit in modern society is we're great consumers, we're great users. You know, we get smartphones, we get the computers. We're very good with figuring out the features, what they can do for us. But as far as what the technology is behind it or how to put it together or certainly how to repair something, people would repair their own appliances or tinker with their own cars. Or I can remember adjusting the carburetors on the older cars. Now, essentially, we're victims of the professional serviceman. We must seek service somewhere. But it is nice to see something that you can fix, that you can restore, that you can bring back. We talked a little bit about on one of the shows about older electronic products being a good part of the green movement because they are things that were manufactured in such a way that they can be brought back to life. So not only is it an educational experience if you do it yourself, it's also very interesting to see something that you've worked on come back to life. It's a very different sense of pride than just saying, oh, I figured this out. It's like the carpenter or the mechanic. Somebody looks at a job well done and they can put it up. And they say, yeah, I did that, and it's really cool. So now, your own collection right now, I understand you have radios, and you showed me some shots earlier before we got on the air. You have extensive radio. You also have pinball, jukeboxes as well. Is there anything else that you have that's kind of neat, that's nostalgic?
I'm also very, very much into stereoscopic slides. I have actually thousands of them, different viewers. In terms of jukeboxes, I start back in 1939 with the Rockola countertop. I then go into the 1946 1422 Rockola, which is my favorite machine, one that I spent literally weeks and months restoring it so the color wheels and everything work. And then go up to 1953, and we've got the Happy Days Seaburg Model C. And then we go into the Seaburg Model J. And we go everything up to a one more time CD Wurlitzer, which, yeah, I like the looks of it, but, you know, it just doesn't have that mechanical oomph that the older machines do.
Now, what's the reaction you get? I know that I know a fellow who has a jukebox, and I was actually asking Jerry if he knew somebody who might be into jukebox repair because he's having some trouble with it. But he was telling me a story. This fellow who I know who has the jukebox has two little grandchildren. One is about 6 or 7. The other one is about 9. And the first time they saw this thing, they were absolutely fascinated with it. Obviously, it has lights. It has lists inside that you can flip that list the songs. And when the record would slide off and drop down and an arm would come, And they would watch this thing, and they would play songs, and I don't really think they cared very much about the music. But they were just fascinated with the mechanical operation and sort of the idea with the jukebox where you can watch it operate. And do you get a good response? I mean, these are real conversation pieces to have around, I would imagine.
The answer is amazing response. And people do exactly the same thing. And, of course, with the Seaberg, which played the record in a vertical position, it was just amazing. It's like, how do they do that? Now, of course, you were talking about kids. My kids grew up in Back Bay, and most of the people there would have these big fancy parties, and you know, they'd do all these fancy things. Well, guess whose parties were the most popular? Were the ones in our house where we had the Seaberg C playing, and the kids could go over to the wall box and they could put in their songs, and we would have limbo parties, and you know, Dad was the coolest. And again, if you can possibly take, and we've been talking about how do we take this to the next generation, take your kids, take your grandchildren, show them how totally awesome this stuff is and how it's so cool to see a record play. My nephew was bar mitzvahed a few months ago, and what did he want for his bar mitzvahed? He wanted a record player. Well, I guess he was more than happy
I can only
to
imagine.
Buy him one.
Well, you should bring him right down the street here, because we're right down the street from just a few doorways down. I was in there a little bit before the show today. It's a fantastic store, all types of old vinyl, 45s, 33s. He also sells compact discs. And it's interesting to note that for somebody who likes to collect older music, there is some stuff that you may not find on the computer. If you can get yourself to a good record shop, I find that I can find music that I'm interested in, especially if it's older music. I can buy it, and the price of the record album is less than I would have to pay if I went through a download service. So talk about this, like, original type of bargain hunting. And that's another thing that as people tend to get a little older and either take it. I mean, I know somebody who found a complete record collection that belonged to somebody at the Wellesley Recycling Center, found it just sitting in the, you know, it was going to go in the dumpster if nobody walked away with it that day. And this was a guy who was into electronics, into old, he has old Magnavox, multi-record changer players, little console models. He loves that stuff. He took all the boxes that he could get, and he went through them, and about half of it he could say, but it's interesting. It's if you can save it, it's a little part of history. It's a little part of pop history. It's a little bit of a window into how people used to live, how they were entertained. Some of the music is better than others. Some of it's very savable. Some of it, other than to have your record player operate, is a little bit forgettable. But as we talk about trying to save either an old radio or an old jukebox or an old communications receiver, and talk a little bit about the technology that goes into it with the younger generation, it's great to have sort of a living museum in your home, especially where you can bring in the little kids. Now, what else do they? I mean, you have pinball machines as well. So, I mean, I know they probably get a kick out of that, because if it's not electronic and it doesn't light up and it's not Xbox or Sony, I mean, again, that's something that's a real electronic treat.
Okay, we have a place up in New Hampshire, and I have three pinball machines there. Getting somebody to restore them was quite a feat, but I was able to find somebody to help me out with that. And again, these machines are from the early 1970s. Why? Because that's when I was in high school, and those are the machines that I remember. And they're all electromechanical. There's none of the fancy sounds to them or anything else, but somehow just, you know, those the flippers, the click, click, click as the ball bounces off. It's awesome. And again, I really, really enjoy having my nephews, my nieces come and really relive for me, but in other words, basically to bring it to the next generation. And that's really what we're all about, is to how do we take this fantastic hobby and bring it to the next generation.
Well, you know, it's funny that you express it in that way as far as bringing it to the next generation, because I've talked with kids especially, and I'll show them a radio that I have in the house, and I'll say, this is really what was the source of entertainment. You would get news, you would get your music, you would listen to drama shows, you might listen to Superman, and they'll look at it, and they'll say, but what did you do? Well, what else did you do? And without some of these other things that fit into sort of the recreational electronics world, Well, you can show them, and then they stop playing with it. And they say, oh, so this is what you did. It's actually, they have a hard time visualizing it, but when you bring the actual device back to life and they can go and experience it, it's a real kick for them. And just to kind of go back a little bit further, go back to where we started with radio. In your own collection, do you have any favorite radios that you'd like to mention as far as something that really either is a great player or was a great story as far as where you found it or something that you never thought you'd be able to get restored? It was too far gone. Do you have anything that's close to your heart in the radio department?
Probably one of my first consoles, which was a Crosley O2CP, and I bought it at a little antique store up in New Hampshire. It was a console unit, and I opened it up and looked at it, and the chassis was pretty well shot, and I said, I'm never, ever going to be able to get this thing working. And I would sit and look at it year after year, and I went into an antique store in South Boston, and I saw not the same radio, but one that had, which looked like the same chassis. The case on this other radio was totally trashed. I think I paid maybe another $15, $20. Got the thing home, took the chassis out, replaced a couple of capacitors in it, plugged the sucker in, and guess what? It worked. Put it into my case for the Crosley, and that became my very favorite radio for a long, long time. Of course, that goes back many, many consoles, many, many table radios ago, but it's still near and dear to my heart.
Now, are you still in the neighborhood when if I ask how many radios you have, you can give me a number? Because I know too many people who will just either they'll come back to me and say, I don't know, I have too many, I have, you know, they literally have stuff that they've picked up that they put on the bench and they say, this is going to be a project, I'm going to get to it. Well, that was 7 or 8 years ago. They can't really give you a number. All they have is too many, I have a room full, I have a basement. Do you still have a number or do you have too many to count off?
Probably about 45 or 50, which is so-called my keepers. And you have to remember that when I had the hardware store, I would go out on a weekly basis to try to find more radios. And every time that we would find some radios, my wife would always look at me and she said, is that for you or is that for the store? And sometimes I would sheepishly have to say, oh, it was for me.
One for me and one for the store.
Exactly.
Because inevitably what you run into is something like that is the problem when you find something and you say, oh, I really can't. No, it's just, no, I like that one too much. And did you find yourself ever get to the point where you said you wanted to keep too much for yourself and you didn't want to resell?
Here was the situation that I worked out with my wife. She said that you can buy as many as you want, but the money that comes for buying the radios, you have to sell stuff. And that basically kept my collection, basically it helped me upgrade, and the deal was that as I sold more radios in the store, a portion of the money would go to buy new stock, and a portion of the money would go to buy a toy for me.
Well, that's a pretty common way of life. I was talking to the fellow who runs the Radio Attic, and he told me originally he had bought and sold his collection two or three times over, meaning he had gone out and said, I'm going to collect a certain type or a certain brand. And he had quite a collection, maybe over 100, and he would turn that back out and say, you know what, I'm going to go into small table Bakelite sets now, and that's my new thing. So as he would sell off through various mechanisms his existing collection, he would use that to finance, and that's what he would do to keep things moving and to keep some interest going, to keep himself interested in finding other sets. Because what you'd run into a lot of times is people will say, well, why do you have the same stuff? You know, you're listening to it. And again, certain radios, if they're particularly rare or they're particularly sentimental, you're always probably going to hang on to those. But there are more people who are interested in either the challenge of restoring it, so once they're done with it, it no longer has a great deal of interest, so they have a way to move it off, they have a way to go on to the next project, and it's a nice way to see them recycle that way. Now, are you pretty static now in the radio world, or are you still collecting? Are you still out hunting?
I'm embarrassed to say that I still love going out as many weekends as possible and finding the treasures. The ones that I love the best are when I go into a store, and if again, I'll check it out. If the cord's in really good, you know, shape, that I don't feel too upset about plugging it in, I love it. I'll plug it in. If it hums, I'll go like, yes. I'll go over to the proprietor and say, well, I'd like to buy this radio, but it hums. And generally, they'll give it to me at a very good price. A couple of filter capacitors, a little bit more work, I can get them working. And, of course, I always have been buying way too much stuff. But again, I also will sell some things, again, through Aborn every now and then and through some other sources as well.
Well, it's interesting, too, when you say that, you know, if you go especially into an antique store or to an odds and ends place, you know, the person who's in there, they're selling everything from cups and saucers and vases and old tin signs and, you know, here's a radio that somebody brought in. Or, you know, so they may not be as familiar with whether it's even AM or FM or what the advantages of this set over another are or what manufacturers might be a better quality set. So if you go in as a collector and you have a little bit of an idea as to what you're looking for and you go over to the owner, you have a pretty, you know, you can point out a few things that are surface flaws or appear to be flaws from a collector's point of view, make the guy feel like you really know what's going on. You know, he'd more than likely be willing to bargain with you a little bit.
The answer is knowledge is power.
Knowledge is power, yes. Well, knowledge can also help you if you really know what you're trying to pry away as far as how much effort you want to put into it. I was lucky enough to find, I really found too much in stores, but I did find one relatively untouched Philco that had been sitting in somebody's living room for about 70 years that somebody had put into consignment in a little store over near where my son goes to school. And it's being worked on now, so hopefully it'll be coming home fairly soon. But you can find radios in many different places, many different types of outlets. Again, I would encourage you always, before you plug something in, unless you're a competent radio technician or have had it looked at or brought it somewhere to be serviced, you don't want to hurt yourself. You don't want to hurt the radio any further. If it's old and it's degraded and you plug it in, you get too much current in there, you could have a real issue with it. So we want you to be safe. We want you to enjoy the hobby, learn about the hobby, but also use some of the resources we talked about a little bit. Antique Radio Classified, Radio Addict, both have pages that list folks who do restorations for you. Somebody like a Mr. Romano who is working with Jerry who could get it safe for you to play and fun for you to enjoy. I'd just like to remind you all, you're listening to Tube Talk. My name is Paul Burish. We're on WRCA Radio, 1330 AM. It's the program From Admiral to Zenith for antique radio collectors, and tonight we're lucky to have Jerry Cates here speaking with us. He was a fellow who was always interested in electronics and radios and jukeboxes and actually had a successful run with them in his business, which is something that is particularly nice if you can integrate your hobby into your business and then to make it even better that it turned out successful for you. So from what I understand now, you're no longer in the hardware business, but occasionally you'll sell a radio back and they'll sell one through the hardware store?
Through the hardware store, and actually this past winter I decided I really wanted a really nice oriental carpet and worked out a deal with the carpet store around the corner that I could sell some of my radios and phonographs, and basically we bartered it out that we sold a bunch of radios and phonographs, and I got my carpet.
Well, that's cool. And, you know, it's an interesting way if you think about it. I read a story in Antique Radio Classified some time ago about a fellow who found, actually, as it turned out, it was a Stratosphere. It was a Zenith Stratosphere. He flew to Missouri after he interviewed the folks who had it. And older furniture stores, rug stores, home decor stores in particular. Frequently, radios weren't just sold. I mean, we didn't have big box electronic stores then. A lot of the console models especially were sold in furniture stores or in these department type stores. And sometimes if you find folks who either had one in the family, or they had a store, or they still maintain some decor in a furniture store, they would have these older radio sets kicking around. They're good places to go in to look around. And for this particular guy, it turned out he found the find of a lifetime and something that he was chronicling the restoration in the Antique Radio Classified. But carpets, furniture, there's an old store that I know of. It's Blue Hill Radio and Appliance. Well, there's no more radios in there. He still sells appliances, but someday I'm actually going to go in there and I'm going to ask him what does he have down in the basement. Well, Jerry, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your hunting techniques and where you would find things. I know you mentioned the swap meets. In antique radio clubs, just if anybody's wondering what a swap meet is, antique radio clubs, generally speaking, have some type of events where they have a meeting of the club. They may have a presenter. They may have a program. They may have a little music. But normally what they will have as part of their regular meeting is an event where people can buy, sell, trade, barter, you know. So it's called a swap meet. Think of it as a flea market amongst friends, so to speak. And frequently they can be very good places to interchange some information if you're trying to find something. Someone might be able to give you a lead on something if you're looking for a certain make or model that they've seen somewhere else. But they're also very good places to get hooked up with somebody who might have some information on where you could find some technical help if you're having problems or you need to find somebody who can restore something for you. So they're good information exchanges as well. But where were some of the other places that you were lucky enough to find some pretty good sets at?
Well, of course, as they say, the quest is the quest. And most of my quest work has been up in New Hampshire. Why in New Hampshire? Because I've generally found that the merchandise that you find in the stores is usually a somewhat... also have a lot of really good prices on things. Some of the areas in specifically would be in the Bethlehem, New Hampshire area, down in Lincoln, New Hampshire area. You can also go into Meredith, Route 4 in Northwoods. There's a lot of areas in New Hampshire. And again, what I've really enjoyed most about many of the New Hampshire shops is that the people you go into the shop to see, they get to know you after a while. They will keep their eyes open for things, and they'll say, oh, Jerry, I found this radio that just came in, or somebody was looking to sell that. Again, it's the quest is the quest. Areas that I have found to be much more expensive has been Maine. Maine seems to have very high prices. They have, generally speaking, better merchandise, higher quality merchandise, but again, you're paying for that.
I once had heard somebody say that they were fond of going to more rural areas, and they were actually talking about certain states. One fellow was saying he had better luck in the Midwest, especially, he said, rural locations in the Midwest. And somebody said, well, why do you think that is? Why would you find more older? And it not necessarily antique radios, but antique radios amongst it, but just in general, furniture, lots of different things. And he said, well, you know, some of the more in an urban setting, maybe they have, and again, you know, we talked a little bit we've talked a little bit before about finding things that are left outside or in garages or barns, but these are places where people will store things. So if you have a chance to take a look at it and check it out, if you can find it, and certainly New Hampshire kind of fits that bill as far as a more rural, a little bit more open space, people have more room to keep things, maybe a little less likely, you know, the frugal New Englander less likely to throw something out. But oftentimes if you go into a major metropolitan area, you just don't find stuff because the antique stores want to carry real high-end stuff, things that are rare, things that are very expensive, especially the furniture, something they're going to command a good price for. So I think what I'm hearing here is the advice is to get out in the hustings. Maybe if you're taking a drive in the country, you're going to go apple picking or you're going to go out to the farm stands, take a look at some of those roadside antique stores. And I even know people were there when they moved in or from when they bought it, and they could be good places to find a radio.
Absolutely, and just a couple of real quick points. First of all, if you are finding radios, whether plastic especially, the most important thing on any of the plastic radios is you want to make sure that they are intact. What do I mean by that? Is if it's got some major cracks or major bumps to them, just keep away because A, it's worth nothing now, B, it'll never be worth anything. Right. And if you're looking at old wood radios, if the veneer seems to be coming away, you probably want to shy away from that because even if it's a good deal, the amount of work to put those back together is ridiculous.
Yeah, and on the plastic radios, too, it's funny because there are some people who are just, you know, hobbyists and craftsmen, and they can do a plastic repair. And I have seen some people, if it's a particularly fancy set with a good tube count and it's AM, FM, or it's rare, they'll attempt to do the repair, and they're not so concerned with the cosmetics. But a plastic set, if it's beaten up, oftentimes the chassis has been taking a beating as well. And, you know, plastic is harder to work on. Sometimes it's easy to find somebody who restores wood. I doubt if you went around or you looked online, you're going to find many people who claim to restore plastic. Plastic is just that. And it's funny, Bakelite is pretty durable stuff, but once it's cracked, it can be a little harder to make a presentable repair with it. And I would agree with you on the veneer. That's something on the cabinets that's hard to do, and you can often wind up spending so much if you have to have a professional do it that you're not going to have a lot of money left over to work on the chassis. And some things, you know, unless you're somebody who's a real active repair and restoration guy and you're out looking for raw material, you want to have part sets and you just collect chassis, you're not concerned about cabinets, or vice versa, you're not concerned about the chassis, you just look to have cabinets because people come to you for those types of things. You know, if it's too far gone in either department, it's probably something you want to stay away from. Any other tips as far as places you might be able to pick something up?
Every now and then, if you go down the Cape, some of the smaller shops may have things. Every now and then, if you go into a Salvation or a Goodwill, very, very rarely, but every now and then you'll find something. One other radio that was probably the most important radio that I had in my store and the number one bestseller by far were the Zenith Transoceanics. They were a great set. I only dealt with the tube versions of them. They were my number one bestseller. I would sell literally dozens of those. Essentially, you could find them in a number of shops in about the $50 to $75 range. I would sell them day in and day out at $150, and they were incredibly popular. People could get the short wave and just the look, and again, they were selling mostly to younger people.
That's interesting. I know a guy, he runs a radio repair and restoration business, which just on the surface that you can make a living doing that is pretty amazing. But given the rarity of that type of business, he does a fairly brisk business and has a fairly healthy waiting time if you want to get your set repaired. But this is a guy who I would say really knows his radio stuff. And he has told me that certain model transoceanics will routinely blow away some of his solid state, because he's also a ham and he's an active shortwave enthusiast. He says they will outperform some of his Sony solid state shortwave equipment routinely. And, you know, other than the fact that I knew there were a lot of people who are very passionate about the transoceanics, I did not understand that for a portable set that their performance was so outstanding. And that's a whole separate niche right there. There are folks who will only look at those, only want to deal with those, only want to hunt those. I was extremely fortunate, and this goes to Jerry's point of establishing a relationship. If you know somebody who has a little antique or odds and ends store in your town, we had an area where somebody had an antique store, and they bought the rest of the block, and they brought in some local artisans, people who were making jewelry, somebody who had done wood restoration work, and you know, so the different types of things that they would open. They would open on Saturdays and Sundays and try to sell. So I was in there one day, and I was chatting with this lady, and she had mostly furniture that her son was selling. Her son was an aspiring wood refinisher. And I gave her my little radio card, and I said, well, I really look at radios for the most part. I'm not so much interested in the furniture. And she goes, oh, she says, you know, I have a radio at home. Maybe you'd be interested in it. Somebody gave it to us when they were moving about 30 years ago. I put it on a shelf in a closet. And I said, well, what type of radio is it? She said, well, it's fairly big, you know, and she's moving her hands around to describe the size, and it's about 20 inches by about 15. And she said, I think it's in really good shape because we've only had it in a closet. We've never wanted to play it. I just put it there. I wanted to take my neighbor's radio. So I said, well, if you ever have a chance to dig it out, give me a call and let me know. So a couple of weeks later, I get a call from her son, and the kid says, oh, I have this radio here. My mom talked to you. It's a Zenith. So I was going to be in that neighborhood that afternoon, so I said, fine, I'll drop by and I'll take a look at it. So what is it? It's a transoceanic tube model, fairly late vintage, I think probably 50s, and then the 1950s was made. And the thing was absolutely mint. It has a factory schematic. It has the factory booklet. And on the transoceanics, the antenna, which can sometimes be a problem, still worked and was still in mint condition. The cord, which I know sometimes can be a problem because it has that retractable cord, was perfect working order. The only thing it looked like some of the tubes were a little bent on their pins, and I don't know exactly what had happened with that. So, you know, we looked at it, and he says, you know, I'm in the wood business. I don't want this thing, you know. What will you give me for it? So I, for beer and pizza money that I gave the kid, I walked home with this thing. And as it turns out, though, because they always have a fatal flaw, you know, nothing ever works out perfectly. Somebody had dropped in, at some point it must have been open, and somebody had dropped in a socket from a socket set, and the thing had rattled around inside while it had perforated the speaker at several spots. Other than that, it's ready. It's a good candidate for restoration. But again, I think it just goes back to if you do have a pattern where you travel, whether it's for work or on leisure, and you see these stores, if you drop by and you introduce yourself and you say, this is what I'm interested in, these are the types of folks who really go out and scrounge around. And if you make a good impression on them, maybe they'll come back and give you a phone call and or track something down for you if you're looking for something special.
My basic bottom line is, what is radio collecting? What is any collecting all about? It's person-to-person contact. As we have come farther and farther away from that person-to-person contact, people are craving it. People love to talk about themselves. Of course, I love to talk about myself. I'm having a great time here with Paul. But people really love the person-to-person connection. That's why a local hardware store such as Aborn became so successful. That's why the mom-and-pop stores are so important to this country. That's why America is such an awesome place.
Well, you know, and it's interesting, too, because we talk periodically, you know, about why does anybody even want a radio, which is a topic we could do on a whole other show some night. But I think what you'll wind up hearing over and over again is that, you know, it's the human voice. People have been communicating verbally for a lot longer than they've been writing. And there is something to be said for hearing good conversation, hearing a pleasant voice, hearing nice music. It's something that's a little bit more of a human interaction than sitting and checking your emails or scrolling through something on a screen, or, you know, the digital experiences that have become so common, sitting working on your computer at home, whether it's for your hobby or for your work. You know, you do lose these relationships. You lose your interaction with other people. And that's one of the neat things about radio. From its heyday with the old-time radio programs, it was listening to the language, listening to the accents, listening to the interesting characters, hearing all the different voices, hearing their stories. And that what makes radio somewhat unique. That's why I still like to listen. That's one of the reasons we still do the show. And that's one of the reasons that Jerry was such a good interview, and we're so glad he could come by tonight to be not only exponent for the radio collecting hobby, but for independent business in America, which is still very important because a lot of people still need that human touch. Thanks for being on the show tonight.
Total pleasure. Thank you.
Percy Faith and his orchestra. We'd like to thank you for joining us this evening here on Tube Talk. We hope you've enjoyed the conversation and the music and found the topic somewhat informative, maybe mildly amusing for those who aren't into the collecting hobby. We've established an email address for the program if you'd like to leave us a comment, tubetalk1@gmail.com. Again, thank you for listening. This is the program that talks about radio, talks about music, talks about old radio programming, talks about topics that may have fallen through the cracks as we hurtle into the electronic generation at an even faster light speed than we have before. We'd like to remind you to continue to listen to Tube Talk, the best in independently produced radio entertainment.
Tree with anyone else but me.
Anyone else but me.
Anyone else but me. No, no, no. Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. Till I come marching home.
Don't go walking down Lover's Lane with anyone else but me.
Anyone else but me. Me. No, 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 don't go walking down Lover's Lane with anyone else but me till I come marching home.
I just got word from a guy who heard from the guy next door to me. The girl he met just loves to pet and it fits you to a T. So
don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me till I come marching home.
Don't give up with those lips of yours to anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. No, no, no. Watch the girls on the foreign shores. You'll have to report to me when you come marching home. Don't hold anyone on your knee. You better be true to me. You better be true to me. You better be true to me. Don't hold anyone on your knee. You're getting a third degree when you come marching home. You're on your own where there is no phone and I can't keep tab on you. Be fair to me, I'll guarantee this is one thing that I'll do. I won't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but you till you come marching.
Glenn Miller and his orchestra, Marion Hutton, and Tex Beneke on the vocals. It's time to say bye-bye for this week. Thanks again for listening.